You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week, don't try suicide. You're just gonna hate it. It is end of days month here at Nightmare on Film Street, and we are celebrating with two apocalyptastic...
Okay, that's not 100% true. Either way, yes, it is end of days month here at Nightmare on Film Street, on the website, on the podcast, and we are kicking it off with The Happening and The Crazies.
Two modern classics.
Oh, you'll never find another post-apocalyptic movie better than The Happening and The Crazies. That's for damn sure.
Yes, and we are talking about the modern remake of The Crazies, the more recent 2000-aughts Crazies, and, of course, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, the standalone cinema spectacular that is The Happening. But before we get into mind-melting diseases that turn your brain into a homicidal, suicidal, something-cidal maniac, John, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, as I mentioned, it's end of days month here at the podcast and the website, so we are celebrating all things apocalyptic, post-apocalyptic, pre-apocalyptic, Satan stuff, you know, anything that threatens the fabric of reality as we know it. Something that none of us can relate to, that's for damn sure.
No, and it's like the end of the year. You wonder why we made this month the way we did.
Oh, yeah. You know, everybody likes to focus on the beginning of a new year, a fresh start, a do-over.
But we say fuck it.
Yeah, let's just burn it right the fuck down. I cannot wait to bury this year in a shallow, disrespectful grave. 2020 can suck it.
We're not even gonna put a marker on it.
Unmarked grave.
It's gonna be behind the pet cemetery. Like, not even the second pet cemetery, miles from the first one.
Yeah, the anti-pet cemetery, where like, hey, you bury your dead here, they never come back.
And we're not going to tell any old men where it is.
We're treating this year like it's the town and the crazies, and we're dropping a fucking bomb on it.
Or we're starting a tractor on it.
So yeah, head over to the podcast. We're starting a tractor on it?
It happened in the crazies.
Okay. So head over to the website, nofspodcast.com, and check out all the incredible editorials that our writing team is putting together for this month. We've also, of course, you know, the holidays are around the season too, and like, they've got some great stuff lined up. Like some classic recommendations, deep dives into movies you've never even fucking heard of that just sounds so wild and bizarre. And of course, you know, things you're gonna need in the apocalypse, like your official bartering guide. You want to know how many cans of beans you can get for a roll of toilet paper? Chris Atkins got you covered. We got that guide over at the website, along with a whole host of other post-apocalyptic editorials for your end-of-day needs.
It's also end of the year, end of a whole 365 days of horror. John and I are going to be coming at you very soon with our top 10 horrors of 2020. We have a podcast drop of that, and also we'll have a companion article on the website. Mm-hmm. And new this year, because it's been such a weird year of releases and time stuck at home.
Oh, yeah.
We are also releasing a top 10. John and I each individually list 10 of our favorite discoveries of 2020. So these are classic horror films, off the beaten path horror films, and just some new discoveries that John and I watched for the first time this year and highly, highly recommend. And that one is going to be a Fiend Club exclusive. So you can only get that as part of the Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/Fiend Club.
Yeah, we recently finished watching Blood Vessel, a 2020 release with the Fiend Club over on Scener. That was a whole lot of fun. Thank you so much to everybody that joined us for that. And we're going to be doing another live stream at the end of the month. New Year's Eve, bleeding into New Year's Day. We're doing a 24-hour horror marathon, and we're going to stay awake for the whole damn thing.
I already regret this.
Yeah, it sounds... you know, I'm really amped about the idea, and before I even finish the sentence, I realize how tired I'm going to be by the end of it. That's free and available for absolutely anybody. Join us, ring in the new year with us, fucking bury this year with us. As an added bonus, if you're a member of the Fiend Club, we will be giving away prizes throughout the entire live stream in between each movie.
Yeah, and it's going to be super fun. So it's noon to noon, New Year's Eve to New Year's Day. That's Eastern Standard Time. And it's not just going to be movies. We're going to have a bunch of fun pre-shows and commercials. And John and I are going to do some hosting. So in between the movies, we're going to do some announcing and stuff. And you get to see our awake level decrease throughout the night.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Like, my guess is that with each introduction, there's going to be a new type of fast food that we have ordered up to the office keep us awake.
If we have a bunch of different time zones, we're going to be celebrating New Year after New Year after New
Year. Oh, that's so true!
With whoever's watching along.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Just to shout out our web store again, because there's still time to shop before Christmas, and we have a whole bunch of really cool horror/Christmas merch, the Krampus collection. Head to store.nofspodcast.com to check out all of our cool horror merch and NOFS merch. Get it as a gift or get it for yourself. There is also a few days left to enter the Win Your Wishlist giveaway. If times are tough this year, we're giving a gift to one lucky fiend, their Nightmare on Film Street wish list. So all you got to do is build a wish list and enter the contest, and you might win it. All those details are at store.nofspodcast.com.
But without further ado, let's get into it. Let's talk about some post-apocalyptic garbage. Starting off with M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening.
I don't know if any of you guys have heard about this article in the New York Times. Well, apparently, honeybees are just disappearing all over the country. Tens of millions of them. All right, let's hear some theories about why this might be happening. Nobody? You're not interested in what happened to the bees? Excuse all the teachers? The administration makes us teach with a foot of snow on the ground. What is this?
There appears to be an event happening.
Homeland Security and the CDC
has reported attacks. Boston, Philadelphia,
Maryland. White House officials claim the CIA has a defense against chemical weapons.
I don't understand what you're saying. Says everyone's dead outside.
What's going on?
We lost contact.
With whom?
Everyone.
The government's testing something there that went wrong.
The affected area now includes California.
Authorities are now feeling, by the sheer numbers of attacks, that a terrorist group being responsible is becoming less and less likely.
Science will come up with some reason to put in the books. But in the end, it'll be just a theory. We will fail to acknowledge that there are forces at work beyond our understanding.
Written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, The Happening, from 2008, is currently sitting at a 5 out of 10 on IMDb, 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, 3 out of 4 from Roger Ebert, and 1.9 on Letterboxd. I think that this is also important for movies that maybe you think you're not going to have a lot of amazing things to say. It had a reportedly $60 million budget, took in $163 million at the box office.
I remember seeing it in theaters.
We saw it opening fucking night.
I was very stoked for this movie.
Came out on a Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
On a hot June night.
I gotta admit, I was really excited to revisit this movie.
Uh-huh.
John was very not looking forward to it.
I have things to say.
He's been trying to wipe the whiteboard clean 4 months. I put this up there for our end of days month,
yep.
And
this is how we're ringing it in?
I'm just so excited. Yeah, so it was interesting to revisit because I remember being quite upset with the film when we first watched it in theaters. We have not revisited it since.
I've seen it since.
Oh, well, I put it to bed. I tucked it in and I put it to sleep.
Yeah, I remember being so amped to watch this in the theater because and we just watched the trailer again now before we sat down to record. I still think it's I don't know. You know what it is? It's that image of the people falling off the rooftop, the construction workers. Yes. Man, is that good? Man, does that? You're just like, I need to know what's happening. What's going on with this movie? And then, you know, his track record before this, too, has just been like A+, 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 especially if you ask me. Like, other
yeah.
Especially if you ask
yes.
us.
we're weird in the M. Night Shyamalan camp. We still have flags.
I had such a upsetting time watching this movie in the theater that we went to a carnival that was set up in the parking lot outside and I couldn't enjoy myself. I remember going like, let's just fucking go home. God damn it.
The day is spoiled.
Yeah, I don't know that that happens to me anymore. Like, this was at a time where, like, things need to be amazing. And now I'm like, yeah, things just need to be better than bad. Like, that's all I need now. And, you know, this movie is kind of that. It's kind of better than bad.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to be polite.
No, it's so bad.
It's a movie that is just full of bizarre choices behind and in front of the camera. And it's all strange because it's wrapped around some interesting ideas. Like, at the very least, M. Night Shyamalan's always got a good idea.
Yeah, so the premise of the film is pretty darn amazing.
Yeah.
And there's real terror at the core of this movie, but tonally, the film is so messed. It is just a hodgepodge of I don't know what to feel and I don't know what you're telling me to feel.
Yeah.
And I think that particularly comes down to, and I think it's okay at this point to rag on the casting.
Yeah.
I was initially chalking it up before I had rewatched the film. I was like, you know what? You're just remembering it wrong. Maybe they just had bad chemistry. Maybe Zooey Deschanel and Mark Wahlberg just didn't get along on set. But they are just not even great at representing real human people on the screen. It has nothing to do with their relationship being muddled. It's just like, who is Alma and who is Elliot? Because right now they look like they just got scripts and threw them off when the camera started.
I'll give them some credit in that, like, I really don't think the lines of dialogue are very good in this movie also. Like, I don't think they are great characters, period.
But the physical acting is not good. In the beginning, yeah. When Alma's looking at her phone because this boy she had tiramisu with is calling, her eyes are bulging like a cartoon character. And I don't even understand their relationship together, how they interact. It's like they've never stood next to each other in their lives.
Never. Yeah, and like, especially when talking to John Leguizamo's character, Julian, you get the impression that they're like on the fucking rocks and they've barely seen each other in the last few weeks.
And there's a weird setup where nobody can sit together on the train because she's being moody, but then Mark Wahlberg gets on the train by himself even though he's sitting with Julian. Like, it just, I do not understand the choices.
Mark Wahlberg, I just don't think has a very good,
I'm going to say it right here and right now. I don't think Mark Wahlberg has a soul.
There
is nothing behind those eyes, John. There is nothing.
I'll agree with you.
He's like a bird. He doesn't ring true as a science teacher. None of the speculation that comes out of his mouth feels like thoughts. Like, there's no churning behind the scientific character is supposed to want to work through everything.
And you know, like, they give him the space to do that in a few scenes and it's okay, but it's Mark Wahlberg, so it's not.
It just doesn't do anything, but like, it's just like lines.
Yeah.
Lines.
I'm so not afraid of, not that like, who are we? We're not like the Rolling Stone, you know, like, we're just some small podcast. So like, if we shit on Mark Wahlberg, it's not the end of the world.
No, we're allowed to shit on Mark Wahlberg now because everybody realized he's racist and beats people up and almost murdered a guy once. Yeah. So I really don't like him.
No.
And I
don't like him in this movie.
But there are some fun moments where you can appreciate that you don't like him, like particularly when he's forced to be the hero in situations. Like, ugh. After this happens, and they're all at this, like, four corners because the incident is taking place in every direction, so they have nowhere to go. Mark Wahlberg has to be, like, shoved to the front of the pile so he can point at the map when, like, they were fucked off in some field.
Or like, there's a woman having, like, a very intense conversation with her daughter. And
who's, like, killing herself.
And he's like, what's going on? Is everything okay? Everybody alive? And, like, she's only fielding questions from Mark Wahlberg. And then she's like, what? Everybody's dead? Honey, are you all right? No, you're talking really funny. And, like, there's, like, this long list of, like, your daughter is declining and, like, about to approach death. And Mark Wahlberg's like, what, everybody's dead? What's going on? Like, he hasn't heard a word she said.
Or we're in there when they're in the fucking model home and we don't know they're in a model home for, like, 10 minutes.
He thinks he's the funniest goddamn guy in the world because he's just like, I'm gonna really take in this scene and I'm gonna do a little object work with this glass of wine that's not real.
I'm gonna pretend to sip it.
He thought he was the funniest fucking guy in the world that whole time.
And
I'm talking to a rubber plant.
Oh my god, the plant. We need to get a video of the plant conversation and just use it in our regular everyday life. It's gonna be the new GIF, just Mark Wahlberg talking to a plant.
That's great. I remember seeing that in the theater and it not getting the reaction that that movie wanted. Like, it was like a lot of like uncomfortable chuckles, like like none of us, no one in the theater.
Nobody had the energy to even make fun of the movie.
We all just slowly started to mimic his weird, confused brow. Like, from the moment we were like, yeah, this movie's gonna be great. I loved Sixth Sense and Signs, I guess. And then... And then slowly but surely, we'd all finished our popcorn, we'd all drank our sodas, the whole theater. I polled everybody afterward, and we just got more and more confused and wanted to laugh less.
I do have to hand it to the movie, though. Mm. They kill everyone. I mean, except for the heroes. They kill everyone. Like,
yay!
The whole happening, I guess, and as we learn from our science teacher, occurs because the plants are rebelling. They've created a neurotoxin and they're just fucking done with humanity. So they start with group sizes. They're doing major cities and then smaller towns and then groups of people on the road and then just the largest group of people in an area. Every single time Mark Wahlberg and fam are in the right group, they're in the smaller of the group. But we see groups of companions that they coincidentally find and interact with are dead within minutes, which is kind of crazy. Like, good and bad. I do want to talk about the sequence where they are with the other duo, the two boys. Those two kids, like, because we're running through, it's the end of the world, we don't really learn much about them, you don't really know their story. We see them die on camera. It's a terrible scene. But I mean, you gotta give them credit for killing kids on camera.
Oh yeah, lots of people die. Let's just take a minute and talk about the deaths in the movie. Like,
let's just slow it down.
Yeah.
Get away from the Wahlberg brow.
Yeah, let's take a little side quest into fun death sequences. I think they're great. Even the beginning of the movie, the girls are sitting down to have a book read, and then one of them stabs herself in the neck with her hairpin.
Yeah, shout out to the girl from Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, she's the girl beside her.
Yeah, my only thing about those scenes is that everybody freezes in a way that it's like a pause. Like, everybody gets solid pause.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird.
Well, they're being hijacked by the plants, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. Like, and honestly, that sequence of the construction workers jumping off the roof is still amazing. I still love it.
It is enough to give a star bump to this movie.
Agreed.
It is maybe the only star this movie gets.
That dude laying in front of the lawnmower?
Oh, that's good too. Yeah, okay, fine.
Also, the other thing, the rush hour traffic stop with the cop who shoots himself in the head, the cabbie comes out and grabs the gun, and we're just following
the gun?
Yeah. Yes. And then just like, we see a pair of heels that turn and come and get the gun. I love that sequence.
I 1000% believe that M. Night Shyamalan filmed every single bullet in that gun being used from that sequence.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody was like, this is too long. And
we're going to cut it after
this
three.
This is the only good stuff in the movie. Mark Wahlberg is not in it. And there's something really hopeless about this disorder. It's instantaneous. There's no preventing it. And apart from some spooky wind, you don't know when it's coming for you.
The spooky wind thing, I think, is just they had a hard, like, they needed some way to visualize it. And they do a pretty good job directing wind. Like, it really, like, you like, in the sense that, like, they block the wind so that way it's not hitting, you know, the leaves 10 feet in front of Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel. And then you can see it sort of, like, creeping toward them. So, like, that's cool and all, but it's just some big fans, you know, like, and just, you turn them on one at a time. But it looks good.
My favorite, though, is that when they start getting suspicious of plants, like, there's a scene where Zooey Deschanel is pushing Jess, the little girl, on a swing, and we're really focusing.
She's looking up on that branch.
We're really focusing on the rope, like, rubbing on the branch, and we're like, is the tree gonna be okay with this?
Yeah! Oh, boy, there's a lot of that. This is why I think that it pairs well with Alfred Hitchcock's The Shining.
What?
Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
You know we're not cutting that out, right?
Fuck you, we're not cutting that out. I don't even know where that came from.
It was good, though.
So anyway, like, I'm going to try not to make this a huge detour because, like, the whole idea was, like, we're not talking about The Birds, we're talking about The Crazies, because the movie tries to highlight, like, how mean people are to plants, which I don't think it does enough.
Do they, though?
Well, they try to do it in the sense of, like, man versus nature. I think that the tire swing is one of them, because, like, we've just co-opted this branch to support us for entertainment, which is weird. I don't necessarily get that.
Yeah, but it's getting kids outside and to, like, see nature and be among nature. I think a plant would be cool with a tree swing.
There's also a very deliberate shot with the nursery owner. Who's a great character actor.
Oh, he was so tonally weird, too, because he was played for yucks, but, like, everybody else was so misaligned, like, in terms of audience perception, that when he said that weird thing about the hot dogs, yeah, I was just like, are we supposed to laugh?
It's super, you know, the hot dogs get a bad rap. They got a cool shape. They're packed with protein. Like, wait, they have a cool shape? Like
I would argue that they have the most uncool shape.
Kind of. Like, I've never looked at a hot dog and been like, cool shape. Like, never,
hey,
ever,
bro,
ever.
Cool shape.
Yeah, never. But whatever. He's a great character. Frank Collinson, love him. Awesome actor. Shows up in, like, the weirdest places. But behind...
Side note. What else is he in?
He's in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's in... You would recognize him from The Village. He's the doctor in The Village. Hmm. He's in Suspect Zero. He's in Wild at Heart. He's in lots of stuff.
I haven't seen any of those.
Okay. His nursery, right behind in the distance, are the two giant stacks for a power plant. And I think, like, there are a few moments in the movie where we're really trying to nail down that man is bad for the environment. And it partly might just be due to the fact of, like, all of these cars breaking down. And, like, that's just a lot of exhaust being put into the air. The trains breaking down. Like, it's always, like, means of transportation where people seem to get fucked and, like, get killed off first.
So what does the diner mean, John?
I don't know about the diner. So, like, I will say, like, that's one of the things I think the movie's trying to say. But, like, there's this other, like, weirder layer, like, right underneath that nobody I ever see talk about is, it's 1,000% in this movie, and it's about violence and aggression.
What?
Every single time somebody dies in this movie, groups of people die in this movie, you can tie it back to some bit of aggression or violence.
Okay.
Pick one. Like, literally pick one, and I'll tell you what it is.
The construction workers.
So, the construction, ooh, that's a great question. Shit, that's maybe, like, the one hole in this. I will say, maybe.
No, but yeah, I think you're right,
maybe,
though.
Maybe, catcalling. That's super aggressive. They deserved it. Even from 15 stories up, they were screaming at these
okay,
girls.
Okay, so what about the hairpin cold open?
So the hairpin cold open is actually, it's, like, the second time that I watched this movie that I started to formulate this theory, because it's literally, like, the opening lines of this movie. They sit down, they go, I completely forgot where I was. Where was I? She's like, oh, the robbers had kidnapped the people and they were deciding what they were going to do with them and whether they were going to kill them or not. It's like they're reading some sort of true crime book, and, like, they both left off at a very violent spot in their book, and they're so cavalier about the gross details of what's going on. Two groups get into a fight, and it's like
the army dude, right?
Yeah, as they're arguing with each other and screaming, all of a sudden they stop, they start killing each other. That old lady who should not get killed by nature because there's only four of them in a room, just screaming and haranguing Mark Wahlberg.
Oh,
she goes outside.
So maybe it's not actually group size, it's the more aggressive group.
Yeah, it's violence. So it's like wars and stuff, I think, are what would trigger nature. So many other scenes in this movie are people getting mad at each other and freaking out and dying. Including a scene where it's not actually nature that does it, which is where those two boys get killed.
And it's so weird because they're all on their porch. It's such an odd, uncomfortable scene because they stick around after these two kids are gunned down by a shotgun blast, and they mourn over them right in front of the door where the gun was poking out.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's real. It's a strange, strange movie, and it's got ideas. Like, I really think the ideas in this movie are real cool. The idea of nature seeing man as being too aggressive for his own good, and that's why it's thinning out the herd, is cool. Because, like, you are literally a history of people who have just killed each other into, like, a semblance of peace. And now that you're no longer at war with each other constantly, you have power plants, and you're literally just polluting the entire environment. Like, at no point do you stop killing things or people.
Do you have any theory as to why it was only on the East Coast? Or is that, do you think, just like a nod to the birds and where, like, it started at a harbor town and we have no idea if it's going to spread from here or not?
The harbor town seems perfectly natural because that's just where birds would
hang out.
That's
just where fucking birds are.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's just like, if you shot a scene in a harbor town and there wasn't a gull in the background, you'd be like, this is fake. I think it's due to 9/11. I think that's what really all it is. And, like, you saw it, like, the next 10 years of filmmaking where
plants are capitalizing on people's fear of terrorism?
They watch the news. Yeah. No, like, I just think that's maybe M. Night Shyamalan's decision to do it.
Mm.
Like, putting it on the East Coast. And also, too, like, as soon as something happens, it becomes a terrorist attack. We think it's a terrorist attack.
Also, I think M. Night Shyamalan has a thing with Philadelphia.
Does he? Oh, is The Sixth Sense in Philadelphia?
All I can remember is from Split, where they're, like, really focusing on that one tower.
Oh, you're right.
And it's, like,
right.
A commercial for that tower.
Yeah.
And then they never go to that tower.
They never go to that tower.
And the whole movie is trying to get to that tower. And then the finale's in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Not of the tower, of the hospital that they were always in.
Honestly, the other thing, now that we're mentioning it, talking about Philadelphia, it's a super old city. Like, it could just be that this is where people first showed up in America. Like, this is where you first came down.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Yeah.
That's about it. I don't know. Like, again, I think there are fun ideas in here that, like, did we shoot the draft? Like, this is, like, the first draft of this. It's obviously not. I know. A lot of hard work went into this movie.
I feel that way with a lot of M. Night Shyamalan stuff. And this is maybe why there was kind of a curve to the audience's general reception, because, like, after Sixth Sense, people were just throwing production money at him, and so he had all these scripts sitting, and nobody said no to things.
Sure.
And so, like, they were just, like, M. Night Shyamalan unfiltered.
Yeah, because, like, his ideas are a little strange and a little out there, and, you know, like, but, you know, like, we said the same thing about that Unbreakable movie, and, pff, made a lot of money, right? And, you know, Mark Wahlberg's so hot right now, we can't lose! Yeah, like, there's some interesting stuff in this movie. And, you know, you can really see him painting with his Hitchcock paintbrush throughout the whole thing, especially in, like, lots of close-ups.
It is very Hitchcock.
Totally. And it just, unfortunately, I just don't think it works, you know? Like, I love that he tried something this fucking weird and out there, but it just, you know, maybe it came down to casting, but, like, I think the dialogue is bad. I don't think that Zooey Deschanel and Mark Wahlberg's characters...
What does she do? What does her life be before that call? Do we even know?
She works in an office and is married and doesn't want to have kids. You know, like, that's...
And then they have a fucking baby at the end.
That is the dumbest ending of the world. Just, like, 3 months late.
And
oh,
she's so
fuck.
Happy. And the news is like, is this the start of something terrible? That would be like somebody doing family planning right now, like, at the beginning of this quarantine. The beginning, when we knew nothing about the coronavirus, and everybody was like, don't touch handles. I mean, we're still like, don't touch handles, but, like, at least now we know that, like, the percentage of contact is low. We were sanitizing our groceries and stuff because we didn't know, like, if somebody touched this box of Wheaties, am I gonna die? Like, we didn't know.
No.
And they're having a baby in that.
Well, but it's over, Kim. It's been 3 months. Everything's totally fine. Nobody in Paris has died. Man, that's the fucking worst, one of the worst things about this movie, too. The very beginning, like, I think we just gotta know that, like, it's a weird thing that nature did, and we're never gonna have any answers for it.
Oh, the bees. The fucking bees.
What's going on with the bees, guys? Like, fuck. fuck? Like,
don't you have any interest in science?
Like, and as a person who has watched a lot of movies and, like, tried to look at the patterns of movies, like, you know, at 17 or however old I was when this movie came out, I was not necessarily thinking, like, ooh, theme stated. But, like, now as an adult, be like,
oh, God.
You mean to tell me 10 minutes into this movie that you're not going to give me a fucking answer for why people killed themselves for an hour and a half? Fuck you.
Maybe it just happens.
Kind of like, we're never going to know.
It's just a happening.
Oh, man. You know what's great, too, is that at the end of the movie, they have a scientist, basically, like an actual scientist, not a high school teacher scientist, a Mark Wahlberg scientist, at the end of the movie in a interview with a reporter, basically saying the same thing. And the reporter going like, yeah, that's kind of bullshit. Like, I don't know, maybe if it happened somewhere else, we could believe you.
The logic is so awful, though, because you've created this world where we're following a scientist and a scientist reacting to this scenario. And I know that you want us to get on board with, like, how it's happening really quickly, like, and get us to think sample size, if we keep it small, la la la, like, yeah. so we understand at least some of the rules to this incident. But in the beginning, he's basically proposing that the disappearance of the bees is fucking magic.
Yeah, he's like, you know,
could be.
You know, one day we're going to come up with an answer and they're going to put it in the science book, but it's just an idea.
It's just a theory.
We're not
going to
know. We're like, that is not how science works,
man! That is
the
opposite of science.
Think what you're describing is the...
The National Enquirer. Have aliens landed? I don't know. One guy said so I don't know.
We're just going to have faith that the bees left because they didn't like our hot dogs. Like, what if that's, it makes as much sense as that.
Oh, boy. You know, we really, really tried to create, like, a good zen environment to watch this movie. We watched trailers. We pretended we were in an actual movie theater, something pre-2020.
Dim the lights, got a soda.
Yeah, like, phones were chucked out of the room. Like, we were ready to sit down and watch this. And then as soon as that bee shit happened, I was like, what is he talking about?
Opening scene of the movie.
He is not a science teacher right now.
Man, the other thing about this movie, too, is the mood ring.
The fucking mood ring!
Again, okay idea. And, like, here's the thing. I get... Okay.
What color is love?
So, you know...
I don't remember.
Oh, that scene could be great. That scene could be real good. Like,
except it's Marky Mark talking through a tube.
Yeah, to Zooey Deschanel. And, it's... there's
their
no...
chemistry is better when they're 25 feet apart.
Oh, harsh but true. But that story could totally work. And the other thing too, like, especially if we're gonna bring it down to mood, which P.S. mood rings do not judge mood. It's just the temperature of your fucking skin changing the color, right?
Oh, are you being a scientist right now?
I'm being more of a scientist than the scientist in the movie is. But I mean, like, if that's what you're gonna bring it into, like, that's another reason why I'm like, okay, I think it's based on aggression and emotion and, like, turbulent emotion, right? Because let's say the mood ring works, you know? And, like, he's getting into an argument with somebody and we see that the ring's red and it's like, ooh, boy, I'm mad right now. And I gotta calm back down, take a few deep breaths, get this ring blue, go out into the wind, let the wind accept me, you know, for the calm, peaceful scientist I am.
All of the tension between him just, like, walking out like a hero, like,
there's no basis for him going out. He's just like, I can't be 20 feet away from you right now. We gotta be together. I don't care about the wind. I'm going. And she's like, no, don't do it. And so
and
he steps out, and then
out.
She steps outside. Man, the whole thing.
Yeah. Are you ready to get to ratings? I think I'm ready to get to ratings.
I hate this movie.
I do want to double shout out, though, that lawnmower death because it
was
super traumatizing.
The other thing, too, like,
it was,
I always,
live leak traumatizing.
Yeah, I always want to know how much decision-making the specific person makes about how to commit suicide, or if it's just the plants go, like, literally scanning around like Terminators, like probability of death.
The leaves of grass are just pointing at the
yeah,
lawnmower.
Right? Oh, that'd be so great, because, like, that is a horrible way to commit suicide. Like, that is not the way you would think to kill yourself. But it's good.
It's all environmental kills, though. Like, it's all just, like, immediate things in the environment. Like,
yeah.
The construction workers off the ledge, the gun in the middle of the road. Like, it's the girl at the window. Like, whatever's quickest, fastest, immediate.
Yep.
Oh, one kill that we didn't talk about. Mm-hmm. The crazy old lady. I don't know if I, like, loved her. She was, I don't know, kind of weird. But her smashing... her head in the windows of the country house. How that was shot with her outside.
Yeah.
So good. She was very, very terrifying. Also, the idea of the human committing suicide and letting the wind in the house was...
It nails down, like, the possession element of, like, the plants. It's not just so much that they're blocking whatever proteins or synapses stop you from harming yourself. Like, it's literally controlling you.
It was good. Yeah. It was really good.
I dug it. This would probably also work well with, like, the Invasion of the Body Snatchers or something, right?
I'm pretty sure the birds and the Invasion of the Body Snatchers were the two inspirations that M. Night Shyamalan named.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So this isn't like a thing that I feel like, aha, I see
I have
through
solved
you.
It.
But yeah, I'm giving this movie a out of 4. Man, I can't believe Roger Ebert gave this a 3 out of 4.
I know.
Man, I want to say 1 out of 4. I'm going to give it 1.5 out of 4.
I was leaning to a 1.5 out of 4, but then you were like, out of 4? And I was like, it's
right?
Not a 5.
Honestly, I'm starting to get to that point where we should just fucking flip over to 5. Like, it makes rating things on Letterboxd so much easier.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1 out of 4, and, like, that one glimmering star is just the construction worker kill.
Yep.
And the lawnmower kill.
I'm totally with you. Like, a few key scenes of this movie are my 1.1.
Like the one glimmering
the one thing.
Star.
And then, like, my half point is like, man, there's some good ideas in here. And, like, as a person who appreciates ideas, I appreciate your ideas. But execution is really what's hurting that score.
And, you know, to be fair, I do love zombie horror without zombies. The end of the world nature horror is technically like a zombie movie.
And you were saying that about the birds, and like you were really
it's
onto
they're
something
all that like it's the first zombie movie.
It's it, like they come in a horde,
and it's about like barricading and getting away, and this like slow creeping thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I think zombie is environmental horror for sure.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Moving on, let's talk about Breck Eisner's remake of George A. Romero's The Crazies.
I don't care what the calendar says. Opening day, that's the first day of spring.
What's that?
Whoa, 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 whoa. What the hell are you doing?
Rory, you lay that gun down.
David, you did the right thing.
Would you mind taking a look at Bill?
Sure, what's wrong?
I don't know, he's just not right. She worries too much. I'm fine.
You got any plans this weekend?
She worries too much. I'm fine.
Ben. Ben.
What's Dad doing? He has a knife.
How long has it been playing statue?
A couple hours now. Same look Rory gave me.
All things wise and wonderful.
We're in trouble.
Is he dead?
David, there's somebody outside.
Military started shooting town folk.
We gotta get out of here, guys!
You don't know that.
It's okay, I'm not sick!
Dreams in which I'm dying.
Oh my God.
Best I've ever had. Find it hard to tell you. Find it hard to tell you. You're running circles. It's a very, very mad
world. The Crazies from 2010 is currently sitting at a 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb. 70% on Rotten Tomatoes, 56% on Metacritic, and 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
I just want to say that Roger Ebert gave this movie a lower rating than The Happening.
Yeah, Roger Ebert gave this a 2.5.
The Happening was a 3. A 3!
Maybe Roger Ebert's just a real big George A. Romero fan, and he likes the original a lot, and he was not happy with this remake. Maybe that's all it came down to. But you're right. It is a little insane.
This is another one of those movies that I guess we saw it together. I'm going to assume we saw this together.
We did. We were very excited to see this, and we saw it in the theater opening weekend.
Yeah, and then I also remember not being thrilled with it.
It had a great ad campaign. Like, that's the thing. Like, oh boy, yeah. Were those commercials good.
I remember being really sold by that dragging rake.
Oh, yeah.
And being just like, go full rake, yeah. Stay for everything else.
Bring that pitchfork.
Pitchfork, that was what it's called.
And, you know.
Also, for raking, you can rake with a pitchfork. Not really.
Nope. Okay. I'm glad you said it.
I just want to lay the groundwork for my theory here.
Oh, theory.
The pitchfork is the thesis of the movie.
Explain.
No. We'll
no, be- I don't I don't know that we need to discuss the entire film before we learn what the hell you're talking about.
I'm just dropping some truth bombs here.
Yeah.
This film is it's you know, and it's 10 years too early because we are living
under the pitchfork.
We are living in the world that the Crazies predicted. It was just a little too ahead of its time in that it was about the rising of the uprising of the rural man of the. You're not. You stop giving me those eyebrows.
There's the eyebrows have changed continuously, but I'm sure they match everyone listening to this podcast right now.
No, I just think there's a really interesting, I don't know, message in there about the regular world being so quick to just shut down this rural area like it means nothing, and these are farmers. And they're people that grow our food, and they are people with value and lives, and the fact that they are squashed like bugs so quickly by the government and the military, and basically the civilized world so fast, it's kind of really interesting to see with, like, the current situation that America is in right now, where it's, like, so divided based on rural and city living. Like, mm-hmm. You can really put a line in between who's Democrat and who's Republican based on where they live. I don't know. I think there's a real good message in there. And the pitchfork symbolizes the rural people, like the hay bales and barns and horses.
So one question I want to ask about that theory of yours. When you are watching this movie, do you think that people outside of their small town know what's going on? Like Cedar Rapids, the closest major metropolitan city. Do you think Cedar Rapids is watching the news going like, oh, some craziness happening over in this small town, population of 1,200. We gotta quarantine it off.
So that's a great point, too, because I think that leads to a kind of a bigger point that and I wanted to talk about this on the podcast because I think it also relates to The Happening as well. I don't know if the focal point of both films is the most interesting story here.
I'm definitely with you regarding The Happening. Yeah.
Especially with the crazies, like, what does the world look like outside this? Because there's this eye in the sky that it's almost like added like an afterthought where it's zooming in like Google Earth style, issuing these containment protocols and these nuclear bombs. And I want to see more about like the procedure of shutting this town down and like what they went through, because initially there's some form of quarantine and they're doing temperature checks and they're doing... Living in a pandemic, it's a little weird because you're just like, oh, this is uncomfortable. I have a feeling in my stomach and it's not a good one.
Yep.
Something that I didn't have the first time I watched this. So congratulations on them for nailing that in a world that didn't really have that as a precursor. Because now we're going to have really realistic medical anomaly breakdowns.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've all experienced it. And we're going to see like... Something that I don't think we were anticipating is there's going to be a lot more, like, fighting in the grocery store scenes of just, like, civilians refusing to put masks on their babies for no reason, because that's a real thing! But I don't think that would have been in movies previously.
Definitely not. Contagion is definitely the best example we have of a movie that's pretty accurate. It's going to look very, like, underdeveloped compared to some movies we're going to see in the future.
I think in the grand scheme of things, because if you zoom out of our timeline... Contagion actually came out so recently that I think in future history books, if they are actually talking about this pandemic as a big, huge thing, I think they're just going to assume Contagion came out around the same time.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like, if you zoom out far enough, like, it's on the same dot.
I'm 100% with you regarding The Happening. Like, I really... We get a small glimpse where we're watching people who are... watching the news, loading guns. Like, I want to know what the rest of the country was like, especially, you know, just a little off the East Coast and how they were bracing for people that might be sick coming into their city, and they just, like, were holed up with guns. I think we kind of get that a little bit with the two kids that get shot, that farmhouse. The crazies, though, I don't think the rest of America knows what's going on.
You don't think so?
No, and I wonder if, like, the president knows what's going on in that movie. I see it as a government's fucked up, government's trying to clean up their mess, and government's trying to sweep it under the rug as best as possible.
You can't light a nuclear bomb in a country and not have people see, though.
They're not worried about people seeing, they're worried about people surviving it and living to tell the tale of what happened. Because you can spin whatever narrative you want once it's happened. They can say... Someone from North Korea dropped something in this small town to test out some crazy pathogen. And, you know, unfortunately, it affected everybody. We quarantined them. We tested them. They were all positive. They were all sick and dying. And we had to scorch the earth to make sure that it didn't escape to Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I think because the movie is so zoomed in on this couple... That all we can do is speculate. I don't think there is a story that's been developed out that far. You know what I mean?
I really gotta see, like, I'll say right now, have not seen George A. Romero's The Crazies, but good God, do I want to see it now. It's been on the watch list for a long time. I think now's the right time. Because I think his move, like, that whole angle of, like, the government has too much power, the government can do whatever they want, you are just a bug under their boot if they want you to be. He's the right guy to tackle that. I don't know that we get it in the remake. I, like, just broad strokes, really think the first half of this remake is great. The second half, where we're, like, straight military stuff, I think it loses a lot. And that seems like George A. Romero's biggest strengths is the criticism of Americana. So, like, I'm interested to see where he took that story.
Yeah. I have this weird relationship with the movie as well, because there's some things that I absolutely love about it and I'm really on board with. And then, yeah, like a lot of the actual how things play out and the characters and the story and stuff, I'm not huge on.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I love, though, absolutely, and this has to have come from the original because it's got that very cutting George A. Romero commentary where it's not spelled out for you, but you can like see it plainly. And the moment in particular that I really thought about it was near the end of the film after the truck is blown up and they're standing on that highway just looking at the nuclear bomb that had gone off.
Yeah.
And it kind of just summarized the whole film about the problem is that they were complacent. Like they were living this complacent life. Like they had this house and they were starting a family and they were hanging laundry out to dry. And like, it was something about like living on top of a world that has nuclear capabilities and just like living day to day without any fear of it. The whole reason this spawned was because the military was developing toxins completely secret and unchecked by a civilian body. Like people didn't know about it. It was this crazy secret thing. I think they called it Trixie or something.
And yeah, something like that.
When it landed in the water and polluted the water, then this is the first that anybody's hearing about it, is because they are becoming crazy and becoming these serial murdery id beasts. I think that just like translates to like nuclear capability directly.
Oh, absolutely. Like this, this is too much power for you to wield. And you're just like, let's see if we can make this.
We dropped it.
Well, yeah. And also like they
what?
Were.
What? It's not a water balloon.
it's definitely not an oops. Like let's be real. That is not the reaction you should have when this gets out of hand. Like, and the funny thing too, is that like, oh, it was en route to Texas to be destroyed. Like, so you just decided let's build something that ruins lives wholesale. And then, yay, we did it. Better put that in the trash bin. Like, what was the purpose? Like, there's no sense in wielding that power. And we were talking about, or at least I brought it up while we were watching the movie, like with the big gigantic mushroom cloud at the end. Like, I've always been fascinated with Cold War stuff, partly because of that. Partly because it all exists under this, like, white picket fence world where you're right. It should not go unchecked. People should not pretend it's not there. We all know it exists. And the only time that anybody in the world has used a nuclear weapon as a weapon, we decided very quickly, immediately, this is horrible. No one should ever do this again. And like we all made an agreement, never use nuclear weapons.
But we are
still
also
going to
keep
them.
Stockpiles
Holy
of them.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird too, because we talk about the Cold War as being like the peak of the fear of nuclear capability, but more countries now have nuclear capability than ever before.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that clock, that doomsday clock that clicks closer to midnight or whatever, the reason why it's not going down is because we have nuclear capability.
Yeah, it's never going
to
go down.
Congratulations, we will always be within 10 seconds to midnight because so many countries have this ability to obliterate the entire planet.
Yeah. And,
like, great, we're watching horror movies. Like, congratulations, you have this new existential fear that you should have always have, you dumb fool.
So, Here, you want to talk about fear? Like, this is something that
no!
I, like, this is something that I, like, I really had a, I I was patting myself on the back for not bringing it up during the happening, and here we are. Nuclear power plants, like, I just honestly, like, I constantly live in fear of them. Like,
you do?
Well, here's the thing.
We're so close to one.
We live so close that there are sirens around town that if anything, you know, there was there recently.
Oh my God, this is the craziest story.
Recently.
Like literally, it was not during the pandemic. It was pre-pandemic.
I think it was maybe February or something.
But it was
like
still
that.
In 2020. Like it was still in this hellfire of a year.
Yeah, we all in our immediate area got text messages while we were sleeping. I didn't wake up saying, hey, there's a problem. The nuclear power plant is going to implode. Take cover, basically, was the message we all got. We all slept through it. We all woke up and went, what? And it was a mistake. Like, it was a test run, and it should not have been sent to people. But we all woke up with the understanding that, like, maybe we just avoided certain death.
It was sent out to everyone. And, like, we were running around the house being like, do we still have our cyanide pills?
Yeah. they are not cyanide pills. They are iodine. Io died.
Whatever. Yeah,
protect the thyroid at all costs.
We must protect the thyroid.
Yeah, so that's just something that's happened in like our personal life. But even before that, you know, it was actually while watching Last Man on Earth where like, oh, so great. Love.
Oh, yeah, when, yeah.
Yeah, and then they realized that like if no one is around to operate the nuclear power plant, it will just fail and ruin the world. We're not okay, I shouldn't say ruin the world, but it will fail and catastrophe will happen, and like good luck trying to find a place that is far enough away from the radius of we'll call it radiation poisoning.
Yeah,
you got enough coats for that?
No.
It's not gonna be easy to get there. We can't just hop on a bus. But, and then I also watched this really great movie from the 80s called Made in the USA, which was kind of also pretty cutting about America's path to power. And well, like when I say power, I mean like electricity and whatnot. And like really fracking, nuclear power, like good luck surviving this. Like it really seems like this is going to be the end of us because we have crossed a threshold where it needs to be maintained constantly, professionally and properly. Otherwise we're all dead. And it's the one thing that we use to get electricity. And it's just like I get into this weird cycle where I'm like really worried
John,
about
it.
I don't know how we go back from this. Like it's just like we've got wind turbines like all around us. We've got solar power. Like there are solar panels on half the roofs in our neighborhood and stuff. And it's just like I don't know. Like I think we've gone too far. Like I don't see any way out of it.
Okay.
So the Crazies. I really like the first half of this movie. Shifting real hard onto something else to try and forget about my woes, which is usually what I go to horror movies for, and look what they fucking did to me. Like, this is supposed to be my escape. For an hour and a half out of my day, I'm supposed to forget that I'm gonna die one day.
So in contrast to The Happening, I actually think that this movie, I prefer the execution, and I don't necessarily love the ailment, whereas in The Happening, it was vice versa.
Total opposite, yeah.
Yeah.
Love the ailment.
The Crazies, unfortunately, to me, are too much like zombies. It's like a living zombie kind of thing. It's basically like everybody's high on Rage-a-Hall.
It's to destabilize the population.
Yeah.
It's a great weapon.
But then, like, you realize that they can talk and drive cars and...
So, you're talking about the Crazies at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, yeehaw, going hunting, shooting people. They look a little too crazy.
Well, there's that scene when they go back to the house and the neighbor lady is there
with
her son.
And they're out for revenge.
Yeah, and they're definitely infected.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, you seem really into it. I
like it.
I loved all the action sequences and all the fighting and stuff. Like, they did a really great job of keeping, like, the energy high. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, know if I love it.
Are you talking specifically because it seems there are shades of crazy?
Well, there definitely are.
I think it's simply because of how far down the waterline they are. And that's how they track it. Like, this boat plane crashes in our water supply.
Is a plane not a boat if it is in the sea?
Ah, yes, one of the sky boats.
You know the classic parable.
So, like, the first guy who shows up to the baseball field with a shotgun, and then the next guy who's
that's
just,
like... That's a good scene.
That's a great scene. The guy, also at night, where the guy just, like, turns his wheat thrasher on.
Yes!
Yeah!
Love some thrasher.
So,
except the wife stands in front of it.
Yeah, scary stuff.
Don't farmers have rules like, never stand in front of the thrasher lest ye be thrashed? The classic parable.
Of course. But I mean, like, that's a piece of machinery that she's familiar with and used to. It's their livelihood. She wouldn't necessarily be scared of it.
Yeah, but her husband's also in this weird catatonic state.
But it's her husband! She doesn't believe that he's gonna kill her, which is what makes it ultimately even more sinister when he does. Oh, it's so bad because, like, the thrasher is just a distraction to get her kid first, and then he traps her in the house and douses it with gasoline, and he's just fucking whistling. It's real good. I really like it. But they are the first in line to get water, tainted water. So, like, they're the ones that get the craziest, and I think the people further down the line kind of just become psychopaths. So, I mean, there are shades of how it affects you, because also it's not like they've dropped it into the air or they've literally spiked the water supply they probably would have normally done if they were targeting that population, it's just seeping out of the boat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Out of the plane. God, look what you've done. So yeah, I think that's what I've used to explain why some crazies are different than other crazies.
Yeah, and I know because we're following characters that are like in the war zone of this scenario, we don't get all the information on it, but there's a scene where the cop, the main character, stabs a woman with a knife that has impaled his hand, and he is like cutting open her neck with it. And like there is just so much blood commingling. If this thing is transfers to like it's so it's just water. We're not blood on blood is not gonna transfer it. Like blood on blood transfers everything. If you fail giving somebody a cold, you could probably definitely give it to them by doing like a blood pact.
I think they are immune. And like it because of movie logic, right? Like the well,
he blood pacted her neck.
It is a hard blood pact. Yeah, very hard. I mean, hell, even just shooting that guy might. Yeah, probably not.
That happens all the time in movies where it's like you have to keep the sick people away from you, and they shoot them like close range. If you get blood in your eyeball, you are done for.
Or in your mouth.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, honestly, the only movie that takes that seriously is Planet Terror, which is bizarre. Like, there's a scene where Rico is going through the hospital slashing people, and he's, like, literally avoiding blood spray because he's like, don't get it in my eyes.
Yeah, like, you basically, in a zombie war, if it's that infectious, you need PPE if you're going to be doing any close range combat, because it's zombie saliva, like, and they drool, like, they're just like.
That's why they drool. It's like rabies, right? Like, they want to get that drool on you. But I think they are infected, but they are maybe asymptomatic is not the right term for it, but I think they are just unaffected by
it. So they're just carriers.
Immune. Or they're completely immune, because even like the one quick little second act library we get from that guy they shoot in the head is just like, yeah, incubation period. I think he said incubation period. 48 hours. After that, if you don't have it, you're fine. Like
And they look over at their friend who's like super cray.
He shoots him in the head. Yeah. It's so like either you're immune or you're dead is what he says. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're fine, which is luck because they're in love, you know? Like the fact that the two
of them.
They're going
to have a baby. What if both of these movies end with baby? Oh, because it's like hope.
That's what babies always are, right? Honestly, I do kind of think that them being pregnant is more of a like, hey, we're at the beginning of our idyllic life.
Yeah.
In the middle of this idyllic town.
With our pretty little house.
And it gets her separated from him in a great scene because her temperature's higher because she's pregnant. But yeah, they really dangle that throughout the whole fucking movie,
yeah.
Right?
And the fact that they have so, I just need to talk about this.
Okay.
The fact that the nursery is done and she is not even showing is absurd. Like John was like, oh, well maybe they've been trying for a while. It's like, what? You don't name your turtle before you buy it.
Some people do.
They don't even know what that kid's gonna be. Maybe he needs cars in his room and you've gone and done elephants, you idiot.
I don't think the newborn baby cares.
The baby has a say.
You could decorate the room with pages from the Necronomicon and the baby wouldn't know the difference.
That is a really fun baby room idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely going to stop your relatives from coming over too often.
Do the baby Nomicon.
Yeah, here you go. I don't know. Like, they bought the house. It's got four rooms. There's only two of them. I guess when you're bored, you can decorate the nursery.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be, like, a thing that you do. I don't know anything about pregnancy, but there's, like, a phase.
And so, as an expert, we're here to tell you.
As an expert. Well, there's supposed to be, like, a period in your pregnancy that you're supposed to do it. Like, it's called nesting, and it's, like, the period where you're supposed to start getting ready. I don't know.
As a rule breaker, I find it very odd to hear from you that there is a time and place to do things.
There is a time and place, John.
Okay.
And they did it too early.
Okay.
I don't know. It was just weird how she was just like, I'm pregnant the whole movie.
She says it the whole movie because like it's just like, we can't let her get in danger. We can't let her go under anesthesia because she's pregnant. And then we can't do other stuff because she was pregnant.
She was in a truck rollover.
They put her in a lot of dangerous situations, and
also they go from like one period where they don't eat or drink anything for 24 hours. Like that's not good.
No. I love the beginning though when they're getting cut off and like we're super insulated in the town and it's just like, All of a sudden, the phones aren't working. All of a sudden, cars aren't driving through town. They're being woken up in the middle of the night with flashlights and guns in their face, and they're being separated and stuff. I love all of the weirdness
that
of the beginning of this movie.
That quarantine-y thing happens so quickly.
Yeah. Like, our internet, we tried watching this last night. Our internet was acting up. We had to finish it this afternoon before recording, and I was like, no big deal. We got, like, 15 minutes left. Middle of the movie. Like, we were in the direct middle of the movie. And I just think that the second half does not play nearly as well for me. I don't know. Maybe it's that we all have a different opinion of the military now than we did in the 70s, maybe? Like, I think it was, like, maybe a little odd to criticize the military and say, like, you know, they could just show up and wipe out a whole town if they wanted to. We know they have that power, but they would never do that. But, you know, after watching the Gulf War, the war in Afghanistan, like, I think it's not a surprise that any of that is possible.
The way that law enforcement and military were initially was just like, they're coming to throw sandbags down when there's too much snow, and it's just like your neighborhood traffic cop, but it's just like, no, they're here to restore law and order. Like, they're here to keep the ship shape, and you are a zombie now.
Yeah, well, like, that's the propaganda that you always see. Like, oh, the military's so great. They have basketball games. They help the community. Look at them bringing meals to the elderly. Yeah, that's to remind you that they won't show up and kill you if they think that your temperature's too high when they're told to do it. Because, like, they unmask a kid who's literally just a kid. Like, he looks like he's just out of basic training, but they're like, hey, guess what, kid? We're putting you into action today, and you get to kill whole families.
Ugh.
Yeah, and then they just do it. Like, because that's how the military works. Like, you're given orders, you're not told to think. Not because you're stupid, but because you'll actually remember that you're a human being before executing those
orders.
Like,
if you think about it, you're going to get PTSD after.
That's right? Yeah!
We don't need that.
Oh, man, the cops are no different. Like, I did an interview with a filmmaker this year who studied up on police procedurals and police training videos for a movie called Survival Skills, which is great. It's really fun, but it gets super dark. And, like, literally one of the highest paid police trainers operates a program called Killology, which is to kill without thinking, so that way you remove the humanity from the work. Like, you wonder why everything's fucked now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. You keep making it hard to go back to this movie.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know if I liked that they were almost zombie.
I know. Okay, so let's actually talk about the movie, because the more we talk about the themes of the movie, the more I'm like, fuck, this is a good movie. But, like, I don't know.
One of my biggest problems is that it, and it's a compliment to the fact that there are so many fun little sequences. Like, I love the morgue. It seems a little ill-fitting for the movie because it's got this kind of, like, voodoo angle.
Oh, and where he's cutting his fucking lips open?
Yeah.
Like, in just enough time to be like,
behind you.
Yeah. Love it.
The mortician, I mean, the bone saw is great.
Yeah.
And, like, something about the skittering of the bone saw on the tile, I was just like, ooh, this is a good ear sound. That was really wonderful. It was just kind of a weird segment. Also, the fact that the lead characters were way too safe. That's my biggest problem with these adventure movies, is that the people that you follow from the beginning make it through all of these crazy, insane odds.
They break into military bases, like, to rescue their wives.
Insane. And then there's fast travel.
You said that while we were watching,
God,
and it blew my mind.
The fucking fast travel in this movie.
Well, yeah, because you said, like, he gets taken from his house, put onto a bus, brought to another place, knocked out, put on another bus.
And all of the cars in town are booted, so they're going everywhere by foot.
Yeah, but they're able to get there, no problem.
And then they're walking around outside and everything destroyed, being like, why does it look like this? Like, dude, didn't you just walk through this chaos to rescue your wife?
Yeah, you were here 10 minutes ago getting guns before leaving and coming back.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Fast travel was the greatest way to describe it. Like, they literally are just like, oh, you know, this D6 can be used like a D12 this round. Yeah, we play board games. What?
We played them once, John. The segment that I loved the most, the segment that I most enjoyed, and the movie is kind of divided into chunks. Like, you can divide it by, like, what crazy interaction it is. Like, the crazy interaction at the truck stop, the crazy interaction at the country house, the crazy interaction in the barn. My favorite was the crazy interaction at the car wash.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, the car wash was another room full of great sounds.
It honestly should not have been as good as it was.
So good.
I had so many emotions watching it. And the first one was, this is ludicrous. But that went away very quickly.
It is ludicrous, but they play it straight. They play it serious. There's a really great, so back on my sounds, there's a really great sound of the wipey rag going up like those
long rubber fettuccine things.
The washer fettuccine.
Yes.
Going up the windshield, and it's like, woo.
That was good.
So good.
You want to do that one more time for my sound? No. Let's just get a clean take for my sound effects file.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're gonna use that. Yeah. I'm going to make a movie soon and all the Foley's going to be from this podcast.
Like, zombies hidden behind suds and, like, hammering fettuccine noodles. So good.
Yeah, and they can't drive out of it because they're stuck in, like, the conveyor belt. Oh, it's great.
It is great.
Yeah, it should not have worked so well. And then just as they're getting out, right? Like, the zombie's broken the back window. They're flooring it. They're getting the gas on. Somebody wraps, like, a noose, I guess, around that poor girl's neck, and she hangs.
That was pretty crazy.
Oh, boy. She died very fast. It was very sad.
Yeah, she did die really fast. Yeah. Suspiciously fast.
But, you know, it saved their lives in the end because somebody just put a fucking rocket launcher through their car while they weren't standing in it.
It reminds me of, and I don't know if this is real or if I'm imagining it right now, but was there not like a haunted car wash? Like a zombie car wash? Because I swear that that's a thing that I've heard of. But
that
if
sounds
it's
great.
Not a real thing, we need to start it up immediately.
You sure it's not just like a car wash like you'd see in a montage where you're like, we gotta save the gym?
No, I meant like a haunt. Like a, You go in your car, and it's like...
Okay, I think you're just ascribing the car wash detail to something that does exist. Yeah, like, there have been haunts this year where you drive through them.
Well, I think a zombie car wash would be great, is all I'm saying.
So you literally mean car wash.
I do, literally.
And then they're just, like, moaning and on top of you with sponges, like... Bleh.
And they wash your car! Okay. But they also try to eat your brain.
Tips are appreciated.
My Venmo is brains@AOL.com. It was popular when I was alive.
So, like, instead of brains, just hot wax.
Full detail?
Man, we could do this for a while, I bet.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that would be a great haunt. And it would be safe because you'd be in, like, African Lion Safari. Just don't open your door.
Nothing about African Lion Safari sounds safe. But I bet those animals don't do shit. They're just like, it's hot, we're laying down. You go ahead and drive on. The movie ends on a really weird note where they are, oh, we're so safe. It's just like, we can see Cedar Rapids, I think. Cedar Rapids, Grand Rapids?
Grand Rapids? Cedar Rapids? One of the rapids.
One of the rapids. Off in the distance, we're making our way to the skyline, and we pull out again. The military sees them walking.
And it's Google Earth!
rather than just shooting them dead, they're gonna go quarantine.
Yeah, like, they have a couple miles left to walk, and they're like, initiate quarantine protocol. Initiate sequel sequence.
Well, like, what it goes to show there is just that it does not matter the size of the city. They will fucking wipe you out if they have to. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's no difference. Like, let's be... Oh, I don't want to keep bringing this back to, like, weird places, but, like, there is no end to their power. They don't care about you. Like, they will kill you if they have to. If given the orders, if they deem it necessary, there's no limit to their power. Like, they have the capability to wipe out entire nations. We just never think about them wiping out, like, a city of their own. But yeah, they can and they will.
And not even just thinking in terms of, like, military, but I think about this all the time, especially, like, with all of my quarantine brain time.
Sure.
That we're actually, like, super lucky. And this sounds like a weird thing to say because we're in the middle of a pandemic and people are sick and ill and people are passing away. But we're very lucky that the first modern day pandemic wasn't something worse, and that it's actually something that we can definitely get through as a community and as a society.
Yeah.
And, like, we're seeing some glimmers because there's vaccines and stuff, but I honestly think that if it was any worse, like if the R-naught or whatever was any higher or this disease was any more grim, that we would have been so ill-prepared that there would have been pandemonium. It would have been insane because we're just not ready. We don't have like protocols in place. And you'd think we would from like the Spanish flu and stuff, but
nope.
We have such short memory spans that if we don't get another pandemic in another 200 years from now, like society then is going to be doing the same situation.
Right? Oh, we're going to be back to normal very soon.
Yeah, I think we're very lucky that it wasn't more serious so that countries can start planning for having adequate PPE and like paying healthcare people properly and nursing care homes. And like that's the optimistic thing. That's the thing that I'm looking at is like I hope we really use the time that we are granted from this crazy scenario to be prepared for something more serious. And I think a lot of people underestimate the coronavirus in general, but we should use this to make sure we never underestimate anything ever again.
Oh, yeah. Like, I got you know, like everybody, I watched Contagion again at the beginning of the pandemic. It's just...
It was a mistake.
I don't know. Like, it made me feel pretty good about what was going on because it did not seem like coronavirus was as deadly as the virus that's in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like what you're describing. Like, if it were more deadly... Because it's just as contagious. I think it has a very similar R-naught, but it doesn't seem like the mortality rate is the same. And if it were, we would be devastated, especially based on watching how people are reacting to it now.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in the United States. Like, Canada's being kind of shitty right now,
too. We're not doing very great either.
No. But...
Most of the world is not doing great. Let's be real. Most of the world, except for New Zealand.
I guess you just got lots of people. That's the problem. When you have lots of people, how do you stop it?
You have a lot of opinions.
America's you got a lot of opinions, too.
I do want to talk about the truck stop a little bit, because I think it's such a weird segment.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, let's go.
So we have the deputy who's definitely going crazy, sacrificing himself at the military base so that our couple can get to the highway and make a break for it to the state line or whatever.
Yeah.
And they go to this truck stop. And it's a weird extra segment. It's like another chapter of this movie after I feel like we already had like the denouement in the field. Don't you find that it was like tonally like lifting you back up a hill to go back down again? Like you're on the roller coaster and you're like, I didn't see this hill.
I felt that way about a lot of the movie, unfortunately. But I think that scene was important because it shows that the military rounded people up and killed them regardless of their condition.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I kind of missed at the beginning of the movie, but they lingered on a bracelet that had I think it was a green band, essentially to say this person is healthy. They still killed them anyway. That's what it is. Like they rounded a bunch of people up. They said, you're safe, you're not, you guys, we're going to put you on this bus and get you back home. And instead, they just brought them to the middle of somewhere, shot them all, burned them, didn't make a fucking difference.
Well, yeah, I think, honestly, I think the orders changed. Like, I think that they were trying to, in the same way that, like, we dealt with the pandemic by shutting down immediately, and then things started to change once we learned more information. Like, I think they had to shut down the population, and then they started quarantine protocol to see if there could be, you know, like, lives salvaged and stuff. And I think that they couldn't contain it because obviously you saw the breakdown when the wife was in the hospital. Like that guy, the fire department, was it, drove their truck through the fences and were like attacking the military, and like they just could not contain it.
Yeah, that's wild.
And so like there was no separating the sick from the well. I've been reading this book about creepy cults and stuff, and there was this whole chapter. Apparently cults have like a thing about poisons. Cults and poisons go like really hand in hand. And I had to stop reading it for a little bit because there was this chapter on this Chinese cult leader from like the earlier 20th century who got like obsessed with developing these poisons for like world domination level. And the book went into some of the poisons that he was working on and some of the things that they tried. And like the poisons that exist that we have now and the chemicals that we know how to make, like we already have things that are as devastating as what occurred in this movie. Is insane.
Oh yeah, no question about it.
Like even the common day things that we all know about because of Breaking Bad, like ricin and all that stuff, like at mass quantities is terrifying.
Well, fuck fentanyl. Like you could literally, like fentanyl is fairly easy to get from what I understand. Like you could kill everyone in a metropolitan city with fentanyl. It wouldn't even be that hard.
And it's like a street drug now.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
This is a pretty grim movie.
Yeah, like, you know, the weirdest thing is, like, we keep trying to talk about this movie, and we keep talking about, like, things that just scare us about the real world. Which, Oh, man, the real world's scary. I did not expect the rest of this podcast to go like this. Like, I really did not. Oh, man, but it's, I feel stupid, too, because, you know, you watch a movie about, like, oh, do you really know what your government's up to and, like, what they're capable of? And should you really just sit back and let that happen? And I'm like, yeah, I shouldn't. Also, I'm gonna go make a coffee and walk my dog and go on with the rest of my day. It's like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, I don't know.
Thanks for this burden movie.
You know, unfortunately, like, I can't vote on what the military does. I guess we could protest more. Like, I that's what we could probably do. It's not like the Canadian government's any better. Like, they're getting just, like, some weird espionage problems, like, this year in their own country. Just, like, trying to, like, weaponize disinformation and failing at it publicly.
Everybody's trying to weaponize information right now. It's just a brutal, I don't know.
I know, just, like, I guess it's good that the Canadian military got caught doing it in Nova Scotia, but, like, let's do what everybody does in a zombie movie. Let's just go to a fucking island. Like, let's just hop on a boat, go where there's no people, and hang out.
I have to be fair, though. Those are my favorite types of zombie movies. The ones where they put them in a really weird location. You know, like
you're on
zombie beach party, and you're like, woo! Today we're in Hawaii, but oh no, there's zombies! That's great. That's such fun. This one was just like zombies in fields, and they weren't really zombies, and there was too much military stuff giving us these weird existential crises. Crisi.
I mean, hey, there's also a bend of just like taking farmland and turning it inhospitable, which is happening all across America right now from fracking and other things. So I can totally see why people who live in the heartland and the farmland of America seem to enjoy this movie more. I'm thinking specifically about one of our writers, Chris Vogel, who wrote a really great retrospective on this movie and has just been like a huge advocate for it. And like reading his article, I like saw the movie through his eyes for the first time, which was interesting before we sat down to watch it and record the podcast. But yeah, this movie bummed me out now that we're talking about it.
I know, I wasn't bummed out watching it, and now I'm just really depressed.
No, because when we watched it was just a movie, and now we're just like, oh, this is the world we live in. Like, this is like, thanks, George A. Romero. You did the thing you did great so well that like we're bummed. Like, the day is ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I do think, though, that there's something there about classism and being able to completely discredit an entire community of people because you undervalue them. I think that's something that's a huge... I think there's like, a huge point there that I honestly wouldn't have recognized without having 2020 eyes. You know what I mean? Like, I'm imposing my 2020 perspective on this film, but it seems like, I don't think I saw that in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's constantly problems about people discrediting farmland, and it's just, like, people think food comes from the grocery store, but it really comes from farmers.
Well,
and,
yeah,
like,
and, like, all the hard labor and these people that live out in rural communities and stuff just being like, there's only 500 people here, we can just... You know, like, put a bubble on it and we'll contain it. Or, like, yeah. Kill them all. And it's just like, yeah, but this is, like, these are people.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they are people. Like, who gives a... It doesn't matter what they do for a living, how many of them are there. They are people.
Mm-hmm. But then I guess at the ending, when they're ready to do that to a major city, it just shows that, like, oh, yeah, we're all equally valued as
exactly,
zero.
Exactly. I think that's... I think the ending of the movie is a little silly how they present it, but that's exactly the point it's trying to make. No one matters. It does not matter to the military where you are, who you are, or how important you think you are. They will wipe you out if they have to, or if they want to.
Yeah, I think it's just the objective, and the objective is to, like, contain Trixie or whatever she is.
Yeah. So what's your rating of The Crazies?
I'm gonna give it a 2 out of 4.
I'm going to give The Crazies a 2.5 out of 4. I really like the first half of this movie.
I really like the individual sequences. I just think that the stakes aren't high enough for you to ever really, like, dive into them, because you know every scene ends with a convenient cop shot. Every single scene.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. Every single scene.
Yeah, like, they're never in dire straits. Like, they were in dire straits the whole time, but, like, you know they're gonna make it out. Mm-hmm. Like, even in the end, when, like, we see that they're gonna blow up Cedar Rapids, I still have a feeling, like, they'll make it out, those two. I mean, they're our main characters. Nothing's gonna happen to
them.
They'll
be fine.
Yeah. Really gotta watch the original now. Damn.
I don't know if I can handle it after this conversation.
Yeah. But, you know, that's just our... sad, depressed, pessimistic opinion.
That's just our quarantine.
Yeah. Let us know how you're handling depression and fear over on Twitter at NOFS Podcast, on Instagram at Nightmare on Film Street. There's the Nightmare on Film Street subreddit, the Facebook group, the Horror Movie Fiend Club. We're even on Discord now if you want to look, if you want to talk to us there at nofspodcast.com/discord. It's the easiest way to get there.
And if you're new to Nightmare on Film Street, hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed this episode. We have fun content every other Thursday, sometimes every Thursday. And if you can leave us a quick 5-star rating and review, it really helps the show grow and reach more fiends. Speaking of which, if you're a huge fan, super fan, you want extra content, more content, swag, shoutouts, join us at the Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
But that's it from us this week. I'm John.
Kim?
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website at nofspodcast.com. And while you're at it, check out all of the other spine-tingling shows on the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.